Today's podcast with Jeff Probst is made possible in part when our listeners shop through our links for Amazon.com. The best strategy this holiday season is to get the jump on the Black Friday crowds with daily lightning deals and support Rob Has a Podcast in the process at robhasawebsite.com/deals. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cisternino here on a very special edition of Rob Has a Podcast. Man, this bucket list is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. We've been waiting for so long, though, to get this man on the phone today. Jeff Probst, the host of Survivor, will be joining us to talk about what has turned out to be an outstanding season of Survivor so far. I'm going to get his thoughts about all things Survivor during this interview, which I am really, really looking forward to. Should be a lot of fun. If you're joining us here now for the first time, if this is the first episode of Rob Has a Podcast that you're ever listening to, welcome aboard. Good to have you on board here. Make sure you don't miss another one. You could subscribe to Rob Has a Podcast on iTunes just by going to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or if you found us on iTunes, come visit us on robhasawebsite.com for Survivor interviews. We do a live recap after the show every week on Wednesday night with Stephen Fishback. We call that the Survivor Know-It-Alls. That's on Wednesday nights at 9:15 p.m. Eastern, right after Survivor. We talk to the latest person that gets kicked out of the tribe, and then we'll do a whole recap episode with a Survivor great on Thursday. So we're going to talk about all the best reality TV stuff for you, and that is exactly what we're going to do here today. So we've got Jeff on the line. Let's jump right into it. Jeff, are you there?
What's up, Rob?
Jeff, how are you? Thank you so much for coming on with us, and I really, really appreciate you taking time out of your increasingly busy schedule.
This is so long overdue for us to talk Survivor. I mean, one of the aficionados, one of the smartest to ever play, and we've never talked.
Yes. Well, Jeff, thank you. I'm very excited to welcome here the four-time Emmy Award-winning host of Survivor and host of the aptly titled Jeff Probst Show. Check your local listings to watch Jeff every weekday. Jeff, really excited to get into it. And yeah, thanks for doing this. It's been, can you believe, 10 years ago this month, Survivor the Amazon was being filmed.
Wow, is that right? This month?
Yeah.
That was back when we did, you know, we didn't do them back to back. I forgot that we would leave for part of the year and then come home and then go again. Yeah, and, you know, back then, the game was still so fresh that even though you knew a lot about what had happened, you still couldn't fully anticipate what might happen, which is, you know, I think one of the differences today is, for the most part, the things that happen, you know, are coming. It's just a matter of when are they coming and in what form.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, one of my favorite things, or one of my most vivid memories when we were there, you know, there was one of the times we were horsing around before one of the challenges, and I was talking about how, well, this is day 12 and day 13. And you said that I am basically like Jamie Kennedy's character in Scream, the guy who's in the horror movie, who knows about the horror movie. And I always thought that was one of the greatest things.
We'd never had anyone like you. I mean, there really was, before you, there was nobody that came on and said, I know the show inside and out. I know everything that's ever happened on every day. I can tell you who did it and why they did it and what happened after they did it. And so you were that, you know, that character. The thing I'm frustrated with is that we haven't figured out how to use you again, because the story on you from a casting point of view was you were too clever for the game. And so the second time you played, you know, you weren't going to really have a chance. And, you know, we haven't figured out how to bring you back in a way that, I don't know, that would utilize you again in a fresh way.
Have you thought about a podcasters versus? well, I appreciate you saying that, and I'll leave that for you guys to decide.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. So Jeff, we got so many different things to talk about. You want to start with Survivor? You want to talk about Jeff Probst's show a little bit?
I don't care. I mean, we're here to talk Survivor. You can talk whatever you
want. Okay. Great. All right. Well, let's talk about this season, Jeff. I think this has been probably the best season since Heroes versus Villains. You said before this season, this is going to be a good one. And people were like, all right, Probst, you're the boy who cried wolf with this. But this time you were not. You're not joking. This is a great season.
Let me just say, I honestly believe what I say. I won't say like Fiji. I did not ever say one of our greatest seasons ever. I know I didn't. I might have said it's a good season because I do believe that week in, week out, it's hard to find storytelling in the kind of show we're doing better than Survivor. It's just consistently great storytelling. But agreed, last year, fortunately for Kim, unfortunately for the show, she just ran the game and it became really predictable. But I don't cry. I'm not trying to cry wolf. I hate that I've lost credibility because I only care about the people who like the show. Even the people who love to hate the show, I still like that they love to hate it. So I don't like losing my credibility. And I'm feeling redeemed, and I'm going out on a limb to say next season will be as good, or dare I say, at the risk of being ridiculed, better.
Wow. All right. Well, lots to look forward to. So this is one really, really great episode. The last 2 weeks have just been dynamite. Now, this tribal council where we had all these different things going on, Penner winning immunity. You couldn't have scripted that. It was amazing. And then you have this mad scramble. People are pulling out idols at tribal council left and right. Was that the craziest tribal council that you've been a part of to date?
Well, at the time, I felt like I really couldn't think of one. When I was going back to get the votes, I couldn't think of a tribal that was more complicated and simultaneously entertaining. There have certainly been fun and funny tribals or tribals where people made really bad moves. But this one was complicated because there was so much happening and I felt so much at stake. One of the things that I get criticized for a lot by people who love to hate the show and or me is that I'm too involved in the show now. And I don't see any way around that. The show has evolved to it where if I stayed a passive participant, it would A, be inauthentic and B, be a wasted opportunity. So when I'm looking at those numbers play out at tribal, I'm no idiot. I can see what's happening. And I felt like this was a huge turning point in the game for somebody or a group. And yeah, to have Abby pull out her idol when all I did was say, anybody else have an idol they want to show? You don't have to show it, Abby. It's just a question. Yeah, it was a complicated tribal, and I love it. You know me and the game well enough to know that both as a human and as a producer on the show, yes, I'm tickled pink when Abby pulls that out. But the thing you never know is, at the time, you never know, is Abby making a mistake? Or is this a really great move? You don't know.
The comment you made at the end of the episode where you said, now this is one of the biggest blown opportunities, and I'm paraphrasing exactly what that was. Now, when you make those comments at the end of the tribal council, is that more for the players or is that for the people at home to sort of, you know, put a cap on what just happened, or are you trying to get a message across to the people playing the game?
No, I'm always telling the story for the audience, always. And every question I ask is for the audience. I feel them in my head going, ask this, ask that. Why is Abby still sitting out? Hammer her. Why is she sitting out? How do you get away with this? I'm not going to change the game by asking why Abby continues to sit out of a challenge. They set her out. They know what they're doing. It's one of the, you can criticize a lot of things about me, but one of the criticisms I never get is when people say, but you're bringing up things. You as a player know they're already considering all of these things. They're well aware of how the game works and how important numbers are. So for me at that tribal, what I saw was a chance for one group to take the other group out. And when the number of votes didn't line up, it was easy to go, somebody blew it. Either somebody just made a big move and they're going rogue and they're going out on their own, or somebody just blew it because you had a chance for a shot at the numbers. And at that point in the game, if you can get a group of people that's in the majority and you don't screw it up, you move four or five steps further down the game than you would otherwise.
What's more exciting television, when there are a bunch of players who know how to play the game or a bunch of players that don't really know how to play the game, or a combination of both?
Combination.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best when you have, because the ones who don't know how to play can screw up the game in a way that makes it tougher for the ones that do know how to play. And that's no different than in life, which is why I like it when we end up with a cast that's uneven, because it's really easy in life to be successful if everything goes according to plan. But if you're 15 minutes late and there's an accident on the freeway, okay, now what? And that's what I like about that. And that is something we consciously look for, is good player, maybe more, a little more naive player. But there's no such thing as fair or unfair on Survivor. It's your game. We don't really do that much. I mean, it's a contrived situation. That's a conceit from the beginning. You're not really, truly abandoned. We're there. But the idea is you're on your own. For the most part, you make up the rules. We'll twist the game around and try to mess with you, and you adapt.
One of my favorite things about this season is you guys brought back Penner, who I'm a big fan of. And you have this relationship with Penner that I'll call it a love-hate relationship with Penner, where he seems to always get into it with you somehow during the game. Do you think, is this a good idea for players to mix it up with you? Or do you think that only Penner this could possibly work for?
It's funny. I never look at it that way. I look at it as I am a tool to use however you want. I'm going to ask questions. I'm consistent. I always do the same thing. I try to tell the story, and I'm trying to figure out who's going home, and I'm trying to let the audience in on it while also asking enough red herring questions to keep you fooled. And as you know, we don't show all of Tribal Council because it would take too long. But I'm usually asking the same questions to everybody. So nobody, it's not super obvious what I'm going for, because it's a much longer process. So when it comes to how you interact with me, if you're looking to make a name for yourself on Survivor or become a bigger-than-life character or become a potential all-star that we ask back, then you might choose to use me. Penner uses me in a way that works, because he's a really good writer. He's very much like you in that he has the gift of wit. So he's able to take something I say that's kind of innocuous without a response and turn it into a moment. I don't care one way or the other. I will go to him more often than I go to Angie, because, you know, in spite of the fact that she had some pretty great moments in her limited time, she's younger. She's not as well-versed. She's not as well-spoken. Penner's great. Coach is great. Boston Rob is great. Parvati is great. Abby's fantastic. You know, so yeah. I go to people who are going to give me something. It's not a good idea or a bad idea. I don't ever take it personally, ever. Penner can't ever get me mad at him. I know he's playing a game, and maybe despite what people think, I don't go home and go, I hope Penner wins. I hope Penner wins. I don't think anything. Our show years ago proved that it can withstand good winners and bad winners, poor sports and good sports, straight, gay, tall, short, white, black, fat, skinny. You know, all kinds of people have won this game. And so I never think of it that way, but I do go to the people who give me good stuff, which is why I went to you a lot, and why I'm less likely to go to I can't even think of it. Rick from last year.
Poor Rick.
Yeah, poor Rick. Well, you know, I went to him every time, and he'd say, well, I suppose. Okay, Rick.
Yeah.
You know, and after about four badgerings of every kind of psychological approach I could take on him, I just said, you know, screw it. I'm just not going to talk to you anymore, because you're not helping tell the story.
For you, something different has happened this season, and I know it's in different variations has happened before this season, but you have these two players, Jeff Kent and Lisa Welchel, who are people who have these other, you know, these other celebrity lives, who are coming into the game and not telling people their secret. But obviously, you know, Jeff Kent is a baseball player, you know, Lisa Welchel is an actress, and you know that the people at home know these things. How does that change the game for you in your job when these people have these things that are part of the narrative?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. It really doesn't, other than the first part of the answer is, when we're out there, I don't really ever think about Jeff Kent being a pro baseball player. It doesn't enter my mind. I'm looking at another guy who's, people keep dogging me on, what do they call them? Man crushes or bromances or whatever, that I only like dudes on Survivor. Here's the truth, like it or not. The majority of our biggest characters are men. That's just the truth. When we sit down and we make a casting list of our greatest characters, it's probably 70-30 male. That's just the truth. I don't know why it is, but they tend to be larger characters. Maybe it's because they have bigger egos and they're more outspoken and they're more outrageous, and the women are a little more clever in terms of, you know, hiding in the draft and going along and trying not, you know, like Amber beating Rob in the All-Stars was brilliant because she let Rob be the big blowhard and take all the bullets, and then she didn't have any enemies. So for whatever reason, those are our biggest characters. So when they're out there, I'm just looking at Jeff Kent. All I thought was he would be on the show whether he was a Major League Baseball player or not, because he's kind of a good old boy. He's that guy with a toothpick in his mouth, and he never complained about a single thing, ever. Never once complained. And everyone complains on Survivor. Everybody bitches about something at some point. Jeff Kent never did. Lisa Welchel, to me, was not Blair. She was a Christian mom who was trying to live up to this ideal of a role model, but she'd chosen to play a game many would say was created by the devil. And so that's what fascinated me. And from the get-go, when we first did our interviews pre-game, I said, if Lisa lasts long enough, she'll be an amazing story, because she's gonna struggle, because she doesn't want to lie or cheat or steal. And I don't think you can win the game anymore if you never play. You can't, you'll never make it. If you're telling me you'll never lie, I'm going to lie to you and I'll beat you. I will cut your throat before you cut mine, because I'll trust that you're never going to lie. And so if you're telling me the truth, you're dead. Now, if you're setting me up to cut my throat later, you might beat me. So I don't see them that way. But I will admit that I did something I've never done before, ever. I almost outed Jeff Kent in one challenge. I was yelling. I don't remember what was happening, but I said, Jeff Kent drops it. And his last name came out of my mouth.
Oh my God.
And no one said a thing. And then I checked with the producers later and I said, did it come up? Did anybody in the interview say, and it never came up. Nobody ever heard me. I think there's so much pandemonium going on and I'm yelling, you know, nonstop at people trying to get under their skin, that people just zone out and they just heard like the teacher on, you know, Charlie Brown is wah, 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 wah. So yeah. Fortunately, I got away with it, but no, it really doesn't impact it. But
so Jeff Kent is like the reverse Cochran. He doesn't want you to call him by his last name. He's the only one that's
right.
First name only.
You're right. That's funny. I hated that he's gone. I loved having that guy out there. I wish we had more guys like him that just come out and want to play. What I do want to ask Jeff in the live show is why did he have it out for Penner? It seemed like that was getting the best of him when he and Penner could have really been a good team together, but they were jockeying with each other about, I want to go further than Penner. That's no way to win. You want to get to the end. You don't want to get further than somebody. You want to get to the end. There's only one way to play Survivor, and that is to win. That's it. Otherwise, why are you wasting your time? I mean, seriously, there are easier ways to get on TV these days.
The Kent thing, I wonder, I'm going to put my amateur psychologist, okay. Maybe you could have him on the Jeff Probst show and get into this, but I wonder if the whole alpha dog thing goes back to him with Barry Bonds, and could there be something there? He wants to be the top dog.
Could be. That could be his Achilles heel. Sorry, I took a bite of food. That could be his Achilles heel. You're right.
Yeah. How about this season also? We had the other crazy moment at Tribal Council involving you where Dawson kisses you on the way out. I mean, is that the craziest exit involving you in Survivor history?
Yeah, and it was actually weirder than it looked. Sometimes things aren't as weird as they look. This one, we didn't capture it because she really was staring at me for quite a while, and she never took her eyes off me, and I felt it. I'm thinking of a few different things when you're doing that torch snuff, but I felt these eyes, and they never darted. They were looking right at me, and then I snuffed her torch, and she held that look. And from my point of view, she came right at my lips, and she was going to plant it square on my mouth. And then at the last second, she hit my cheek. And it was odd. Even the people at Tribal, all the contestants were commenting afterwards, like, whoa, what just happened? And afterwards, all the producers said, oh, my God, that was bizarre. But I've never talked to Dawson. I don't know if she was trying to have fun with me or if she really just wanted to say goodbye with a kiss or what, but I like Dawson. She's kind of crazy, but she was really funny and just kooky enough that made sense.
Yeah, it was wild. Now, you didn't get in any trouble from at home with Lisa, right?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't think she was bothered. Excuse me. I'm trying to eat a little lunch when you ask a question. I don't think Lisa was bothered by that at all.
All right, good. And of course, we're talking about not Lisa Welchel, but your wife, who we haven't even congratulated you since I've seen you on your new nuptials. Congratulations, Jeff!
Thank you.
And now you're a dad now.
I am. I was really, my whole life kind of changed. She had two children from her marriage, and they were young enough that they were, they were totally open to another dad. They really didn't think much about it. They just kind of kept moving along, and now her ex-husband is remarried, so now they feel like they have two moms and two dads, and it's awesome. And they come out to location and have the greatest adventures, because being a kid on location on Survivor is probably top five adventures. You have the ocean. Yeah. If you want to learn how to scuba dive like Michael did this year, you have a dive master who can teach you. If you want to go into the art department and build virtually anything you can think up, you can do it. And then if you go to Tribal Council and, you get to practice the challenges, it's the greatest camp in the world.
Survivor Camp. You can, take applicants now. So let me ask you a little bit about the future of Survivor, because I think it's very interesting, I think, to wonder about, where does Survivor go from here? Do you think that Survivor is something that could go on indefinitely, or is it something that you think has a lifespan, or could Survivor be a show like Jeopardy or Wheel of Fortune or Price is Right that just goes on for generations?
I don't know. It's a great question. I don't know. And I think it's a legitimate question, because there was a certain point where you started to look at Survivor and think, wow, it really shows no sign of wear. I mean, we're, as you just said, this is one of the best seasons we've had in a while, and it's a good one. And I'm confident that 6 months from now, you'll be going, wow, 26, solid, two back-to-back great seasons. And so I don't know. I think at some point it will become, the one thing Survivor will face is we're in the transition period now of how people are watching television, and it's impacting the budgets of all the shows, because people are DVRing. They're not watching less TV. They're just, they're just watching it when they want to, but there's this big question mark surrounding advertisers and how it's going to work with commercials and who pays for the show and are people watching the commercials. And so that's the one big question I have surrounding Survivor, is can it survive the transition that's coming in television, that nobody really knows what's going to happen? Lots of speculation, but nobody's certain about how it's going to go. But it seems to be that at some point, content will continue, but the distribution method for it will change. And can you survive that transition. But in terms of a show, if you could do it for a price that made sense, the concept and the structure, the format is really solid. You take a group of strangers and you abandon them. You force them to work together to survive, but get rid of each other in the process. It's pretty brilliant. And I, you know, the best thing that's happened in my whole professional career is I happened to get this show. I lucked out.
You know, a historical show of, you know, one that, you know, probably changed television more than any other show in the last 15 years. And we love it, and we hope it continues to go on. Now, Jeff, let me ask you a hard-hitting question here. So are you on board contractually for the Survivor 27 and 28? I don't want to get into the inner workings of contracts, but have you decided yet?
Oh, no, I'm doing it. Our deals are a little, they're sort of year by year, but no, I'm fully on. I'm ready to go. We start casting here shortly. And so technically I don't know that we have a contract signed, but that's a formality really. And we don't have a location, but we'll have one, and we don't have any contestants, but we will. So we're just ramping up for that, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. Well, if you're looking for any returning players, I think there's only about 300 on Twitter.
How many? Okay. Let me ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
How many of those 300 that want to come back should come back if you were producing?
Well, I think very few should come back, and I think that all whatever 400 or whatever all want to come back. But yeah, there are very few people where it makes sense to bring them back. Now, there are probably some people who were, you know, casting gold who didn't get a fair shake the first time, and you know, there's plenty of people that have been brought back multiple times that would be good as well.
Who would you bring back?
That you haven't brought back already? Let me see. Really putting me on the spot here, Jeff.
You can take a pass and hit it later. I'm just curious if you have anybody on your mind.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, I can only imagine who might be coming back for in future seasons. So it's a tough question
Here's what I think has happened. We used up a lot of our great players. And I mean that in a good way. We got as much as we could out of some really great people who re-energized the show, whether it's Coach and Philip or Parvati and Amanda or James. And, you know, the list is long. Suri. But you can't, the question is, can you keep bringing those people back? Do they want to keep coming back? And if not, you have to breed some new stars. And to do that, you have to have some new seasons, like, you know, people like Lisa Welchel, people like Malcolm. A lot of people are liking Denise, which really surprised me. We have a new villain blooming in Abby. But you have to have seasons where you don't, you know, where you have a lot of new people so that you can create people that you want to see play again. Because there's no denying that our ratings do very well when we bring people back. And for all the people who complain, keep it pure, there's just as many people saying, oh my God, I can't get enough of Coach. He cracks me up. Or Phillip's hilarious, you know. So it's something we talk about all the time is how do we keep the casting fresh? How do we keep the creative fresh? What's our new twist? You know, people, I loved Redemption Island. A lot of people didn't like it. I loved it. That's just me. Personally, doesn't mean it's right or wrong. I just happen to like a loser's bracket. I always liked it in sports when you had a second chance and it was going to be much more difficult. But if everything lined up, it's possible to lose your first game and still win the tournament. So I like that. It changed the game up. It changed strategies. It changed how you voted people out. And that's what you have to do on a show that's in its, you know, 25th season. You have to take risks. And it's very easy to sit at home in hindsight and backseat drive and say, oh, you never should have done that. You shouldn't have brought back Russell again. You knew he was going to be voted out. Well, you don't know. You can make some assumptions, but you don't know. And so you take some chances. We tried 3 tribes this year. Did it work or not? It remains to be seen. But we needed to break up the numbers. That was happening is people were locking into a 5 and not moving. And it was making it tough to produce. So whenever we find something like that happening, our job is to make it much tougher to happen. And the three tribes makes it much tougher, because if you want to win and you're number five, you've got an opportunity to become number four somewhere else, and you better take it. And I firmly believe that in terms of playing the game. It's not me wanting people to make big moves. It's me saying, why else would you come out here? Because fifth place is nowhere close to worth it compared to first place. Mm-hmm. There's one check for $1 million. Everything else is really kind of like covers your expenses. So that's a philosophy that I think continues to reign supreme, which is keep flipping the game. And if you're a player, get ready at some point to make one move and hope you're right. And if you're not, hey, you go down. There's a great quote by, we were just reading it last night. I wish I still had it up here. I would give you something to ridicule me with later. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Hold on here.
All right, Jeff Probst, okay, looking for quotes here, doing research.
Yep. You can ridicule me this as long as you want, but I believe this. It is not the critic who counts, nor the man who points out how the strong man stumbled or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs and comes up short again and again, who knows the great enthusiasms, the great devotions, and spends himself in a worthy cause, who, at the best, knows, in the end, the triumph of high achievement, and who, at the worst, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. And that is survivor to me. And if you want to play this game, then get bloody in the mud of survivor. And if you want to sit on the sidelines, man, do some other damn show. Join another reality show. Get on The Bachelor and hang out. But don't come and get screwed up and bug bitten and sleep in the cold and the rain not to win. And with that, I conclude my not my interview. I conclude my speech for
President. Well said.
Yeah, thank you.
I will write your name down for the $1 million.
Thank you.
Well said, Jeff. So this season with, you know, you have Lisa Welchel, you have Jeff Kent, we've had Jimmy Johnson on Survivor before. Now, let's say hypothetically after this season is over, Lisa Welchel starts booking more work. She books a sitcom for next season. Jeff Kent, all of a sudden, his autograph value is going up. Are you being approached by other celebrities to say, hey, Jeff, get me on Survivor. I want to go out there next season?
No, it's not. There's not a ton of celebrities. We don't really go after anybody. Those guys both, Jeff Kent came to us, Lisa Welchel came to us, and Jeff Kent said, I just need another adventure. And this game won't define me any more than baseball defined me. I used to play ball. Now I've played Survivor. Now I'm going to try something else. So those guys are just looking for an adventure. But most celebrities don't have the balls. There's just no doubt in my mind, because they live a protected life and you can kind of control your image. And on Survivor, no, there's none of that. I mean, you're going to be reduced to your most basic state, and it's going to hurt. I mean, it's hard. Survivor's hard, and I think it's getting harder. The people are getting hardier, but the show is getting harder.
Yeah. It's a brutal season, this one.
Oh, my God, the rain. It rained, I think, I don't remember exactly the number of days, but I remember my family was visiting, and it was non-stop rain, non-stop. And when Dana came out, I felt so badly for everybody, because they were drenched, and her body was like a prune, and
yeah,
I so badly wanted, on some level, the doctor to just say, she can't go on. But I've drilled into their heads, you never pull someone ever unless you're going to look me in the eye and say, if I don't, they may die. And if that's the case, pull them. And I won't ever argue, even if it's a small little cut. If you're telling me that infection is really worse than I know, totally trust you. No looking back. Otherwise, it's their call, because people recover. And some people have this you know, intestinal fortitude. They want to go on. But with her, man, she was in bad shape. I mean, she was shaking and shivering, and her, she was pale, and she looked like she was about the size of a, you know, she looked like an infant. And when our doctor looked and said she could go on, I thought, oh, I'm so sorry, Dana, but you're going to have to quit if you want out. You know, because it's right. It's tough, but that's where the legitimacy, I think, of the game stays true.
You know, Jeff, now this is 25 seasons now, this season. I feel like you guys didn't really make a big fuss over 25 seasons, which is such a huge achievement. I know it hasn't been 25 years, right. But still. Do you have one or two favorite moments from the 25 seasons?
Oh, talk about a tough question. I mean, there's some obvious ones, but they're not great answers. You know, I want to give you a great interview, but I mean, Richard Hatch still rubbing his beard in his hands after winning was a great moment because first of all, we shot it live. So we had to keep this secret, and there was real sort of still sadness over the fact that Rudy didn't win. We all thought Rudy was going to win. We got to this last challenge, and Rudy was going to hold on forever. He's a Navy SEAL. I mean, who can outlast a Navy SEAL? Nobody. And one little moment, he lifts his hand, and all of us collectively kind of went, oh my God, is our show going to suck now? Is that it? We had no idea how big Richard Hatch would be for the show at that moment. So I do remember Richard winning. And
what about for you personally, as opposed to for the in the show?
Big moments. What comes to mind for you? Remind me.
Well, I wasn't there for all of them. I was only there for about like 1.1 seasons that you guys did. So, you know what? Forget that.
I'll tell you the first one that comes to my mind is Russell nearly dying. And I think people might think that I hype that up. There's no hype. His blood pressure plummeted. And in what was only a matter of like maybe 2 or 3 seconds before the doctors looked at me and nodded like, it's over, he's out, we're pulling him, here comes the shot. And in those 2 or 3 seconds, 100 thoughts went through my head, including, we're going to have our first contestant die on the show. Oh my God, how am I going to handle this? What should I be doing? And it's one of those things where people say time slows down. I thought he was dying. He was dying. I thought it was like lights out in London. And then boom, he came right back. That was a big moment. And the other big moment was I remember sitting with Burnett in season 2 in our little mess hall with a big tent where we were eating, and a call came on the radio. A survivor just went down in the fire. A survivor just went down in the fire. And I remember the look on Burnett's face was not one of shock or concern, but one of, oh, brilliant. And I think he knew we're covered. We've got a great rescue team in place, but oh my God, this show is for real, is what it looked like his mind was saying, you know, that this is the real deal.
That's great. Jeff, I could ask you about hundreds of more questions, but I know you're very busy and you got to go. So let me just ask you lastly, how is your transition of doing the Jeff Probst show going from Survivor? Now, you've been doing it for what now, 4 months, 4 or 5 months of taping
September,
shows?
October, November, 2.5. We premiered in September. It's going fine, I would say. It's a completely different way of doing a television show that I'm still learning. I enjoy it, but I'm still learning the language, and I haven't found it yet. I really haven't found where I feel really comfortable being me and doing a show that really I'm completely behind, because you're filled with opinions and opinions of people telling you, you should do this. Research says they like this. So the focus groups say this. And what I realize is I've been really blessed on Survivor, because Survivor was shot with very little involvement from the network, because Mark when he pitched the show originally, nobody bought it. So he went out and sold it with sponsors and came back, and there was very little risk for the network because he had the money to produce it. So as a result, they kind of let us go do this show, and there were no notes. There weren't these things like, oh, the tribe has spoken. Well, that's kind of corny. Or what do you mean a reward challenge? That's weird. And so we just did it. And then it came out of the gate a hit, and we've never really looked back. And to CBS's credit, they've been a really good partner in not getting in the way of the show. We've all just kind of let the show evolve. But that's not how it goes normally. Normally is what's happening on the talk show, which is everybody has opinions, including your mom, as the cliche goes. And so you have to find your way. And that's really what I'm doing. I'm just looking at it as a big science lab and trying different things to see what sticks, and also to see if I can find something that I really enjoy and see if there's a marriage there.
Yeah.
But I have a question for you.
Yes.
And this one you should be prepared for.
Yeah.
I want a critique of me, because I read a lot of criticism about me that I'm too much this and not enough that. And so give me the critique.
The Survivor host or the host of the Jeff Probst
show? No, Survivor.
Okay. Let me see. So, Jeff, I like it when you're, you know, because I think that you're trying to make a more entertaining show. I do like that. I would appreciate more inappropriate comments out of context that I feel like those have been cut down this season, and we'd like to get those back. But
what do you mean? What is that? What is that?
We like to track your out of context, inappropriate comments.
Give me an example.
I think last season you said Troyzan's got two balls hanging off of his disc.
Right, love those.
So, you know, I feel like those have been scaled back a little bit.
I think we just didn't the opportunity. Whenever you do a challenge with balls, you know, you already have a shot. But I think I just didn't have the opportunity. I love doing it.
Okay, good. But as far as Jeff, you keep doing what you're doing. You got four Emmys here. You don't need some guy with a podcast.
Specific, because I mean this when I say we only make the show for the people who watch. We're not trying to get new people to watch. I never go out and say, "Oh, you haven't seen Survivor? Check it out." I only talk to people who watch, and I'm curious because I want to make the show.
You're talking to the base.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe it was the week before. There was Penner lost a challenge, and I said, after he lost the immunity in the heat of the challenge, I said, Penner's out. He's in trouble tonight at Tribal Council.
Yeah.
And I kept reading, Probst, what are you telling him he's in trouble for? Now, before I give you my answer, when you hear a comment like that, is that an out of place comment?
See, at the moment, I didn't think it was, but then he somehow played the hidden immunity idol at Tribal Council. So my thinking was like, well, how did Penner know to play the immunity idol? Because there was nothing in the Tribal Council where it was like, you know, Jeff Kent wasn't like, you know, there could be a blind side tonight. You know, I don't know. You know, there wasn't anything that seemed to make Penner say, boy, I better play my idol. And the only thing you could point to was that you said, Penner could be in trouble tonight. So people put two and two together. Oh, that's where Penner got to play the idol from.
Okay. So maybe you don't remember this, or maybe I probably didn't do it actually back then, but anytime somebody starts losing or loses a challenge, or like in the case of Katie, who was also frustrated with me because I kept picking on her, well, pick up the pace and I won't. But when you're the last person on a tribe challenge, the game is about heroes and goats and winners and losers. If you're the last person they're dragging up, I'm not going to say, Jeff doing a great job of dragging Katie. I'm going to say Katie pulling her tribe down. That's the goat. You're the goat. And now you have a chance to become a hero, or you're likely going to be at the very least a red herring at Tribal Council, and maybe you're going home. That's not news to anybody. People are talking about you back at camp. If you're in a strong alliance and you still suck at challenges, you may survive. But if you're in a borderline alliance or you're low in your alliance and you suck at challenges, you're probably gone. This is not a big news flash. So with Penner, A, he's a good player. B, he's a returning player. And C, he's on a tribe that could be, that he's either, it was either the individual portion of the game, I guess, and they were going to tribal. I say that all the time. If you lose, no shot at, I'll often say, so-and-so out of the challenge, no shot at immunity, could be voted out tonight. We don't put everyone in. We put the ones in that end up having an impact in the story. So I'm always surprised, not frustrated, I'm learning, but I'm always surprised that even this many seasons in, people still think that A, I could influence, and B, that I would, that I would risk my own job security, that I would risk our franchise, which is now a $1 billion franchise, by saying, Penner, 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 Penner. Hey, play your idol. You're in trouble. Penner, you're in trouble. No, I'm saying, Penner, you're in trouble. You are, dude. You're in trouble. If you don't know that, you're always in trouble. Have you seen the game? People get blindsided all the time, and you're a bully, and you're a returning player, and nobody wants you to win, and half the people here don't like you. This is all news. So I like getting this feedback because I don't want to spoil the game. I'm not going to change anything I do to date because I never feel that there's anything I've said that's inappropriate yet other than yelling Jeff Kent's name. But but it helps me in terms of how we tell the story in our editing, you know, that sometimes due to time we don't do enough to show that I also said it about Jeff Kent, and I also said it about Katie, and I also said it about, you know, whoever else. Because at the end of the episode, they weren't in trouble. The only people in trouble that night were person A and person B. So as the episode, when you watch the beginning of Survivor, we start to tell you already, we play this fun game of giving you information about who might be going home. If you aren't hearing from a person at all, they're not going home. That should be pretty obvious by this many seasons in. And so if you are hearing about somebody, there's a chance they're going to either be a hero, they're going to be involved in a fight, or they're going to be in trouble at tribal council, but there's some story that's going to hover around them in this episode. And that's, I think, where those comments end up seeming bigger than life.
Well, Jeff, I don't think you have anything to worry about. I think it's all good. And especially don't listen to these former survivors because, you know, I'm not sure how you guys passed some of them to begin with on these psychological evaluations. But definitely don't listen to them when they're tweeting during the show. Does that get annoying to the returning, the former players that are always like, at Jeff Probst, hey, why don't you put me back on? Because I'll show you how to really do it.
No, I get it. I get it. I'd be the same way. It's why I liked Redemption Island. Every time somebody's voted out, I have a moment. Every single time I have a moment where I go, oh man, that sucks for them. They're done and they know it. And it hasn't even caught up to their brain yet. They're out. They're out. There's no coming back. And that blows. And now what's going to happen next is you're going to go to Ponderosa and it's going to suck worse because you're going to sit there. No, I have total empathy for people who've played. I would want to play again. I would totally want to be back. I think there's one guy I've blocked from my Twitter account, and now I can't even think of his name, which shows you.
Oh, that's the best revenge.
But he's an ass. He's a total ass. And it's not like he was hurting my feelings. It was just like, dude, I'm not going to give you a forum to call me a dick over and over and over. I got it the first 100 times. You don't like me.
Yeah,
pretty sure you won't be back on the show, and I don't want you to kick my ass, so I'm just going to block you.
Right, yeah. Right. You don't need all that negativity.
No, I don't. No, I don't mind the negativity. Really, I mean, with the exception of that guy, I really don't. I get it. I like that I'm, I think people don't get it. I have a sense of humor about the game, but my job on the game, you got to get past me. I make no bones about it. And if I ask you a question to tribal council and the best you can come up with is, I don't know, I will pummel you. And if you can't get it together, it will probably hurt you. But if you're smart and I ask you a question, you've already been thinking about it while you laid in the sand all day and you've got an answer that gets it off of you and onto somebody else. Those are the guys that end up going deeper because they're thinking. If you really show up and you haven't thought one fucking moment about tribal council, you're an idiot.
It's like a press conference.
Yes, exactly. Have your speech ready and think about your clever quip when you vote for somebody. And remember, like I said, if you go on for a minute, we're never going to use it. Watch the show. The ones we use are about 3 or 4 seconds long. Something clever, like you're a dunce. Later, you know.
All right, Jeff. Last thing. Here's what I want to know. How can the listeners of Rob is a Podcast, the Survivor fans out there, how can we help support you even better with the Jeff Probst Show?
Oh, I appreciate it. But honestly, the people that do support it, I really do appreciate it, that there are some people that know that we're trying to do a new show and that it's hard to get it going. But that show will live or die on its, you know, on its own merit and what people want and what they're watching. And we're giving it our all and we're working every day, but I'm not out begging for people to come watch. It'll find an audience or it won't. And, you know, it's so far, it's been a really fun experience. We have about 4 or 5 former Survivor people working on it. And I go in every day, and it really is, to kind of sound cliche, we hired everybody, everyone we hired, we liked. And the people that we didn't like, we didn't hire. It didn't matter what credits they had or how good a producer they were. I just don't want to be around people that are burnt out on life. I still love it. So the show does well one day and it doesn't do as well the next day. And 80 people come in and say, oh, I think it's because you wore blue socks. And you go, you really think that? Really? Okay, I'll wear blue socks today. Here you go. I'm just having fun with it and trying to learn. Just, you know, learn about life. Just keep on trucking.
Yeah. All you can do, I feel like a great quote about this, Phil Rosenthal from Everybody Loves Raymond in his book. He says, you know, make the show you want to make, because they're going to cancel you anyway. Because whether you do what they say or whether they you know, make the because it's going to work because it's your show.
Yeah.
You know?
And, you know, it's funny. We had some friends over last night, and a friend of mine who's a writer said, he was talking to a friend of his who lives in Montana, and they were talking about a third person, a mutual friend. And my buddy said, oh, he got fired. And he got fired from that show. And this guy from Montana said, oh my God, what'd he do? And my buddy said, he didn't do anything. He just got fired. And we were realizing it's only in Hollywood that you literally get fired just because. You usually get fired. As you say, most shows don't make it. Most executives get fired. Most actors, you know, get written out of shows. That's doesn't mean you're doing anything good or bad. It's like Survivor. I got lucky. I'm the one they gave the job to. Lots of people could host Survivor, and it would be the same or different, better, worse, who knows. I just happened to be the right guy at the right time, and Mark said yes to me. That's the biggest reason my life's different. I got lucky.
All right. Well, we got lucky when we got you to say yes to coming on to Rob Has a Podcast.
It was a pleasure, man. You do a great job. You're a good interviewer.
Thank you very much, Jeff. Hopefully next time we can go hiking like Kristen Bell.
That was fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much,
all right.
Jeff.
Later, Rob.
Take care.
Bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. Jeff Probst, the host of Survivor. Wow, I can't say enough about how much I really appreciate Jeff coming on with us. Really great job by Jeff Probst. Very generous with his time. Under no obligation whatsoever to come on and talk with us. And there he is. And I have to say, even after all this time, still a thrill to talk to the host of Survivor. So we got a lot more Survivor to cover here in these next couple of days. So we've got coming up for you. Here we go. We've got Wednesday night. Let's get Stephen Fish back on the phone. Let's do a little Survivor Know-It-Alls live after the episode at 9:15. Then let's talk to the latest person who gets kicked off Survivor come Thursday morning. And then Thursday late afternoon, I'll be speaking with Marty Piombo, one of my favorite people to talk Survivor strategy with. Let's break everything down here with Marty. So a great couple days coming up here on Rob Has a Podcast. Very exciting stuff here, and what's been a really fun season for me, and I think for a lot of you guys too. If you like what you heard today, give us some good feedback on iTunes. Go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. Leave us 5 stars if you think we deserve it. Leave us a comment if you think we deserve it. We appreciate it, and that helps us out in the iTunes rankings. And if you're a new listener, follow me on Twitter. Go to @RobSesternino on Twitter. Or type in robhasatwitter.com. I'll keep you posted on what shows are coming up. An occasional attempt at humor, even. That's all happening on Twitter. And of course, if you want to leave us a message about this show, about something that happens on Survivor, something else that you want to get off your chest, go to our voicemail and leave us a message. You could do that. Go to robhasawebsite.com/voicemail. Leave us a message and tell us what you're thinking. Nicole and I will respond to it on Thursday's Survivor show. So, can't say enough good stuff. Thanks so much to Jeff Probst and everybody at CBS for helping to put this together. And thanks to you guys who all summer long hit Jeff up on Twitter, said, Jeff, we want to hear you on Rob Has a Podcast. This is all because of you guys and how hard you work to make this happen. So thanks so much, everybody out there in podcast land. So much appreciated. I'm going to go off now. Thanks so much, guys. Had a great time today. Looking forward to the Survivor Know-It-Alls Wednesday night. Talk to you soon.